Well, to me as well, though, I think that when people say that, it is a bit of a red flag about that relationship. Not that I like being sort of, you know, the fourth official to people's relationships, but...
VAR, please.
Yeah, VAR, video assistant referee. Let's watch back that argument and decide who was in the wrong. Everyone, we are just discovering that Siobhan doesn't know everything about her phone.
Excuse me?
We're recording a video this time. I'm just going to give our cameras a wave. Just a little bit.
And
she didn't realize that she could use the up volume switch to start recording. Which
I did not actually know that at all.
There you go, learning something new.
So there you go.
Speaking of learning new things... People need to know how to support us.
Yes.
If they haven't, I mean, they should know by now because we've drilled it into them. But
we continue to drill, though.
We will drill deeper.
Continue to screw it in. You can subscribe to us where you listen to your podcasts. Leave us a 5-star rating and you can write a review, please.
Obviously, Instagram, TikTok, Threads, YouTube. Follow us, please, @poly_podcast.
You can also email us, podcastapoly@gmail.com, and visit our website, the-poly-podcast.captivate.fm. In fact, people who did email us and people who did respond to us on social media, we can thank for this episode.
Yes. This is why you should be doing these things, people, because it means that we can tailor content to your wants and needs and interests. So, but before that, we're going to address
first things
sound.
First. So, a few of our lovely listeners in our community have come to us and said that they've noticed a slight issue in some of the levels in our sound. And I want to say that, yes, this is an issue that we've been working on almost since we started the pod. We thought we resolved it, but we're aware that in the last few episodes there's been a little issue with sort of Rich's levels, my levels. It's been a bit of a mess. Someone described it as a roller coaster when you listen to it, which is not how you want it to sound when you're producing a podcast.
And honestly, some of that is partially due to just getting overexcited and moving a little bit too far away from the microphone, so things like this happen. But I'm endeavoring to remain close to the mic.
Yes.
No matter how excited I get.
So, first of all, we just want to say thank you so much for bringing this to our attention. We really appreciate it. And second, we've done a lot of work on making the levels a little bit better and a bit more listener friendly. So
hopefully you can hear that now.
Yes, exactly. And hopefully the volume's a little bit better. You will notice in the coming episodes that we have recorded interviews ahead of time. So some of those might be at
a little bit roller coastery.
Yeah, they might be at the old setting. So I just want to say, bear with us. Thanks for sticking with us with this, guys. We really appreciate it. Yep. And hopefully from now on, it will be a bit of a smoother listener journey. And yeah, just bear with us while we fix it. But thanks for your patience and thanks for sticking with us.
Yep. And speaking of sticking with us, you can stick with us even harder. It was reaching. Apologies, but obviously many of you may know we have a workshop coming up with the lovely people at Plura, formerly Bloom Community, and we were originally scheduled to do that on April 28th.
Yep.
It has now been moved to May 4th, principally because we are very busy people and have things to do other than speak to you.
Which is hard to believe, but it's true.
I mean, if I could speak to you guys all the time, I would.
But
you aren't very good conversationalists because you never speak back. So one day we'll do a call-in episode so you can.
It is about polyamory lifestyle orientation.
Yes.
And you can get tickets at the link in our bio. So please do that.
Yes.
And come along on May the 4th.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
May the 4th be with you.
I did think that. You know, I was like, That's a Star Wars day. We're going to have to
have some kind of Star Wars element if we can.
It'd be rude not to mention it.
Maybe we should just have little, like, little C-3POs in the top of all of the slides. Or, you know what I mean? Just little hints of Star Wars in there.
When Rich and I first met, I had never, not once, seen a Star Wars film.
And how many have you seen now?
And then we did this thing where we watched
all of them.
Like, including Han Solo. And
yeah, we went.
Is it 11 films in total?
We went 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3.
No, we didn't.
Didn't we?
No, we did 1, 2, 3.
Did we?
And then we did Solo, like, in the middle.
Oh, we did them chronologically.
Yeah.
So we did 1, 2, 3, Solo, and Rogue One.
Yeah.
Then 4, 5, 6.
Yeah.
And then 7, 8, 9.
So we watched 11 films in 11 days. And I was...
You were obsessed.
Obsessed. Like, I loved it so much.
I don't know anyone that actually sits down and watches Star Wars, especially with me. Although I'm more of a Marvel person these days. But then watches them and doesn't get into it.
I just...
At least a little bit.
I think, you know, it's kind of how I felt about Marvel, where it was a bit like... It feels like it's too much. I know the characters. Mm-hmm. I don't know anything about this. Like, I don't know what the deal is. So how do I start?
It's a lot to cover.
And I knew that it was, like, made, like, 4, 5, 6 were first. Like, I knew that there was that. So I was just like, where do I start? And I understand I could have just, like, looked it up or whatever. But yep. I didn't know how to do it. And it was really nice having you just put them on for me and tell me what was going on. So that was really helpful.
It's a bit like polyamory in that sense. There's so much to go through, so much work to put in, but the payoff is huge, except for episode 8 and 9. Then it's not.
9 was my least favorite, or 8.
No, 9. The last one. Yeah. The last of the, yeah, it would just, that was a roller coaster. So speaking of, I think our audio has been a roller coaster. That was a roller coaster that you just couldn't wait to get off.
Yeah, true. And but also controversially, like, people didn't like Solo.
I loved it. Perfectly done.
Yeah.
And anyone that says otherwise is just a jabroni. So come at me,
yeah.
Bro.
Yeah.
Jabroni.
Well, those are all the parish notices I had.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Shall we dive in?
Let's talk about all the things you had to talk to us about.
Yeah.
With the thing.
Mm.
With the secondary stuff.
Well, shall we do a bit of background? So.
Yeah.
People will remember earlier in the year, we did an episode. Sorry, that was my phone. It's going on silent. Apologies, guys.
That's the first time that's ever happened. We're normally so good.
And you know what? It's actually a message from one of my partners. So there we go.
Oh,
at least it's polyamorous related.
Next time you speak to him, tell him I said, fuck you for interrupting. No, don't. Say hi.
So we did an episode in January called Hierarchy, Good or Bad.
Yeesh.
And as part of that, we asked anyone on social media to get in touch with us and tell us if they enjoy being a secondary. And so we thought...
And you did.
And everyone... We got so many responses. And
shitloads.
That's probably one of my favorite things is when you feel the sense of the community, people sharing with us.
When you feel like you put your finger on the pulse very successfully, right?
It's nice. And so we got a lot of responses, and so we have kind of picked some that highlighted the different themes that we saw in all the responses.
Yep.
We're not using anyone's names, but if you're listening and this is your response, thank you so much for sending it to us.
Absolutely.
You'll be staying anonymous, but you know who you are.
Yeah.
So we're going to kind of go through some people's responses today and see what they had to say about being a secondary.
All right. So a big sort of like overarching thing is you know, the concept of the secondary. It can be a valid relationship idea, but I wonder if we can update the language.
So to not be secondary.
Yeah, not necessarily secondary, but some other sort of thing, the term that would be less hierarchical in a way.
It's a really good point, and it's a really good question. And I think you and I, even when earlier on we identified as open more than polyamorous, we always sort of struggled with this term secondary.
Yeah, it just doesn't sit quite right because no one's secondary.
This is a good question. It's like, how do we describe when you're not a, you know, nesting partner or primary partner is quite a common term. how do you describe that without, you know, sticking a secondary label on it? I think because in terms of if you're talking about hierarchy, I think having like a tier, you can, it helps people understand, like when you're communicating primary, secondary, whatever. I understand that. But I think because it's numerical, it feels like it's – so like I just feel like there is a problem there because it is, it feels numerical, so automatically we're going to be like rating stuff like primary, secondary, tertiary or whatever. You can sort of – I feel like I can, I see because it's numerical how it could be a little bit deductive of what of what that person might be in someone's life.
Well, it's just like ranking people. Yeah. It's just, it kind of doesn't feel right.
Yeah. I think something that I do or that I prefer to use, like this would be, I suppose, my suggestion to this listener's sort of idea, like point about it being not quite right, is I feel like I would use like my nesting partner.
Yeah.
Or my partner.
Which is basically what we say, right?
Yeah. But then maybe if I had, not that we're hierarchical, like I don't necessarily see my partners as secondaries. However, I might try that distinction by being like one of my partners, which I just sort of said, or this is my boyfriend or my girlfriend rather than my nesting partner. So it's not like, it's not a like numerical ranking system, but there's still, I suppose, even just for me saying like these, they have these different roles in their lives. It's like, you know, you've got mother, father, sister, brother. They might not have hierarchical roles in your life, but you can say they're different roles.
Yeah.
So I feel like maybe that's something that we, I mean, that's something I try, I do, but.
Well, look, all of our different, and I don't want to step too much on the sort of first, first big comment that we had, but different friends fulfill different roles and we don't, you know, we don't rank them in any, you know, not in any major way anyway.
Yeah.
There's more of a line of friends, isn't there, rather than a horizontal line, I should say, rather than a vertical line.
Yeah.
But but there were people who love being a secondary.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not necessarily the term, but the concept.
Yeah.
One person said, "We don't call friends primary friend or secondary friend. We use BFF, ride or die, versus friends from college we catch up with once a year, etc. Instead, all of us practice hierarchical relationships in our families and friendships amongst colleagues, etc. For sure, those can get fraught too. Therefore, it's possible to do it in our romantic/sexual/emotional relationships too."
Yeah. I mean, something that I've saved for a long time is like my top tier friends. And it's like my inner circle would be another way that I would describe it. It's like my closest people, the people that know me well, that I know, that I show up for, and that they show up for me. And that is part of having a solid support network. People are going to fulfill different roles.
Yeah.
And that is a principle that across non-monogamy is having not someone that's your everything, having someone who, having people around you that can fulfill different roles.
Mm-hmm.
And so this point is speaking to that, I feel.
Yeah. And like when you think about in a more monogamous way, you might have your closest friend is your partner or your wife or your husband or your
nesting boyfriend, partner, girlfriend, whoever, et cetera,
whatever you want to call them or whatever they are. And then you have your best friends on the next sort of ring outwards. And then you have, well, for polyamorous people, you might have a nesting partner who's kind of your closest sort of ring. You might have a girlfriend or boyfriend that's the next ring out. And then you might have your best friends sort of sharing that ring or maybe the next ring out. And then outside of that, you've got sort of more, slightly more distant friends that are kept at more of a distance.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and with them, you might have like friends with benefit or a more casual relationship that you have with someone, or, you know, I'm using a term casual that we've kind of been critical of, but you catch my drift.
Yeah.
And it's like for a lot of polyamorous people, I think this is probably true of me, that those rings that your friends have, that they're on, are kind of, they're sharing them with other partners a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
As well as the friends. So
Yeah.
The dynamic is what's different. Mm-hmm. There's romance there, there's sex there, there's whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, for me, I would put some of my closest friends in the same ring as you, like people that are so important and close to me that I've known my whole life. And I think this is something that, you know, relationship anarchists and solo polyamorists are doing so well, is not prioritizing a romantic relationship over a platonic relationship.
Yeah.
And and that's sort of a really great way of doing things as well. It's like I might have my best friend and my family who I'm platonic with on my in my top ring or top circle or whatever, and other partners elsewhere. But, you know, it's like I think having a combination of all these things is can be really powerful and speaks to that idea of having a strong network around you. So I love that point.
Totally. Do you want to give us the next one?
I would love to. So this is from a different listener, and they have said, in terms of loving being a secondary, they say, I love the lack of stress and excitement that comes with seeing one another. I think they mean like the lack of stress, comma, and also the extreme excitement that comes with seeing one another. I enjoy being part of a family, even if it is part-time. Honestly, it's been the most secure I've felt in a relationship for a long time.
Love that.
That's great.
Because this is it, right? Just because you are quote-unquote secondary doesn't mean that you aren't secure.
Oh, yeah. And also this idea of the lack of stress, like not necessarily having to take on other – if you're not the primary, you then also have a set of rules. I mean, not rules. Also, like your role might be different. So that is something that a lot of people actually cited was that like they're not having to – stress out too much. And, you know, I think it's another thing as well, like you hear this sometimes in blended families where there's the one parent who's like, I have to do all the boring school stuff, and then the child goes to the other parent on weekends and it's like, you're the fun parent, you get to do all this, you know, fun stuff, and so of course they prefer being with you. And I think that that's not necessarily the case when it comes to non-monogamous relationships. However, there is something to be said for just having a partner that it's just fun. There's no like life stress. Yeah. There's no like financial planning.
Yeah.
There's no, hey, we haven't got toilet roll. Can you go down to Asda and get some? And I'm going to strip the bed because we're due for fresh sheets. Like there's something to be said for not having that relationship with all your partners.
Yeah.
And having some that is just a bit of fun.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's fine. And to that, another listener also said, I'm a secondary to two other people, and honestly, it feels better than any other relationship I've had. I know I mean something to them, and they mean something to me, but there's certain social expectations that I loathed as a primary partner when I was in a monogamous relationship. The time we spend together has value to us all, but I don't feel like there are things I have to do as their partner. I get this isn't for everyone, but for me, it just feels a lot healthier. And that's, you know, great because at the end of the day, who's to say that you, I mean, we know for a fact already you don't need to have a primary partner or a nesting partner or a life partner. You can just, if you feel like you would rather just be sort of, you know, your own solo person that has these quote-unquote secondary relationships rather than any kind of major, I'm trying to think of the way of wording this. I don't want to say responsibilities because you always have responsibility to each other, but less so, I guess, if you are, if it is slightly more casual or a slightly more.
Well, it's a different set of responsibilities, isn't it?
Yeah. There's still respect that comes with all of these.
Something I want to ask you.
Yes.
So this person says, there's a certain social expectations that I loathed as a primary when I was in a monogamous relationship. It's just got me thinking. You know how quite often when you're speaking to people who are monogamous and you say you're polyamorous, and quite often they'll say, oh God, I haven't got time for one relationship, let alone more than one. You know, that's quite a common, almost microaggression that you do hear as a non-monogamous person.
Yeah, covered.
Do you think that it's potential that because like that sentiment of, oh my God, one relationship, so much work, that those people are in relationships where it's because that one person is their everything, that they're taking up their all their time. So they're imagining having to do two relationships where that person's everything.
Yeah.
And like this person has sort of said, there's social expectations and they were a primary partner. It's like, do we think that that's also like that's why that's where that microaggression comes from?
Well, to me as well, though, I think that when people say that, it is a bit of a red flag about that relationship. Not that I like being sort of, you know, the fourth official to people's relationships, but
VAR, please.
Yeah, VAR, video assistant referee. Let's watch back that argument and decide who was in the wrong. But I do think that if you're basically admitting that your relationship is so much work that you don't have time for anyone else, then maybe that relationship isn't a healthy one. That's just my two cents.
Mm.
Once again, we're not experts. So I just think that either A, your partner is asking for too much from you because it's probably, I don't have room or time, meaning all of my emotional capacity is taken up by one person. And I don't think your emotional capacity should be taken up by one person. Then I think that some of your emotional capacity is kind of being absorbed / you know, sucked away from you by your relationships, which you should always have to be healthy and sort of content, if you will. I think it's important to always have a little bit of room reserve. If you're at full emotional capacity all the time, then what's going to happen to you if something bad happens or something? You know, that reserve capacity is really important, I think, for yourself.
Yeah. And I mean, that's not to say that all polyamorous or non-monogamous relationships more widely are like you've got a tank of emotional capacity, and so then each relationship is like less important and takes up less energy. So therefore, you know, it's like each relationship's a little fragment, and so you can do one big relationship or you can do little fragments. Like, that's not to say that, because obviously we all have the capacity to have multiple committed relationships.
Yes.
But it is – but I think when you've got more people that are good for you and supporting you, you're going to be able to sustain that better.
Yeah.
So I just think that's a really interesting take.
I also actually think that non-monogamy just within its nature encourages – someone like one, if you will, encourages one to prioritize oneself. Somewhat ironically, like people wouldn't expect that, right? But I think it's, and we've said this before, it's a very self-reflective journey when you first start and continues to be throughout.
Well, so, I've said this before, but for me, polyamory has been mostly a personal journey.
Yeah.
People would not expect you to say that.
Yeah.
Shall I go read the next one?
Am I reading or are you reading?
I am. I said I will.
Oh, you want to read? Okay. You go for it, girl.
I'm probably going to cut that. Okay. This person said, I am a secondary partner to a couple and I really enjoy the relationship. For background, I was friends with them both before they opened up. So we had a friend dynamic before. I am married myself and non-hierarchical with my partners. I have six. And while I wouldn't have this structure, it works for the dynamic I have with them. I see them once a month and don't have any more time to spend with them, to be honest. That's interesting because, like, this person's got six partners and they're married.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, there's, like, breaking away from this expectation of you have a partner, so they should be dating every week and doing all these things. It's just kind of like a design your own. And I suppose being a secondary might give you permission to design your own a bit.
Yeah. Well, that's it, right? It's quite designer relationshipy in a nice way.
Yeah.
Does that have negative connotations? I don't think it has negative connotations. Negative connotations.
Design your own.
Design a relationship.
Nah.
It's not a piece of clothing, but it is.
But like,
you're designing it.
But you should do.
I'm not saying that your relationship is designed by, you know, Gucci. I'm saying you're designing yourself.
Moving swiftly along.
I'm solo. This is another. Sorry,
a new person.
Just to not jump ahead. A new person. I'm solo poly and secondary to all my current partners. I don't see it as a problem. I don't consider any partners my primary. I decided early on that as a solo poly, I was my own primary, love that, and no one else would be my primary. I wonder if this thinking has helped me. Yes, it sucks that those who do have a primary partner have to fit me around their primary schedules and everything else that goes along with it, but, and it's a big but, I want the freedom to make my own decisions and not have to worry about household chore, division, etc. So to me, it more than balances out.
Mm.
I feel like there's an element of the domestic with that
one. I was going to say that.
And I get that. Like sometimes yes. You just want to like, I'm happy living alone and doing all that stuff myself.
Yeah.
So I don't mind not having, or rather I don't want to have a primary.
Especially when you're a woman or female presenting. Let me tell you that much. I read a stat recently that when a female presenting or female person marries a male presenting or male person, their work week goes up by 7 hours because they're spending 7 hours cleaning up after that male partner. So I totally get, and a lot that theme came through a lot of not having to do domestic chores and doing all that planning domestically.
Yeah.
And people do find that quite laborious, where if you just live by yourself or with housemates where everyone's responsible for their own stuff, it is less work. And then you go out and just have a good time with people and not have to talk about all this sort of stuff. So
yeah.
That is a theme that came through a lot, and I can see why.
It's just funny because you'd think that having two people in one house would be like, well, there's two of you to clean up. But then the problem is that there's another person that's causing a mess and they're not doing anything most of the time.
Because patriarchy.
Yeah.
That's why. Yeah. It's as simple as that. So.
Fuck it.
So really, I can understand why more and more women are like, first of all, like more and more women are rejecting marriage. More and more women are rejecting domestic partnerships with men. More and more women are like, let's live with mates and like, let's not do that. And I can see why. So I wonder whether that person identifies as a woman. I don't know because we don't know. But just saying. I'm not going to turn this into a crusade about tear the patriarchy down, but, you know,
well,
I may do.
Why not?
I'm going to read another one. This is our last one from the...
From the good.
The people
from
the love. The people loved it section. Hierarchy language sucks. But any euphemism for it would develop similar icky feelings. I think what works really well for me is being both at the same time with the same hierarchical terminology for each partner. I love my nesting partner being my primary partner, and when I want to be a secondary to my secondaries, I definitely thrive in this structure from a mental health perspective, as my bandwidth isn't great enough to juggle more than 1 to 2 secondaries at a time.
I can feel that. Yeah, sometimes.
Says you.
What?
You always have more partners on the go than me.
Not now, I don't.
Yeah.
I don't have anyone.
But in general, I would say.
Yeah, but I've never had more than 2, 3.
Plus me.
Yeah.
But
okay, so change the 1 to 2 to okay. 2 or 3.
But
and then that's me.
I think that this is also something that I think really comes up a lot is people wanting to meet people, to explore with people, to have connections and grow their network, but might not necessarily have the emotional, physical, practical bandwidth to have multiple full-on relationships for whatever reason. People have a lot of demands. So being able to have permission to connect with people but not them having to be your quote, your whole life or your everything.
Yeah.
So I think that that's also really like a massive benefit to having this secondary, or as I would call it, like boyfriend or girlfriend in your life. Which is, I think for me, like that's part of what non-monogamy is all about, community. So.
Totally. Totally. Couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
Right. There obviously are some that do not like the idea of being a secondary, and we'll kick off with this one. I was a secondary once in my last relationship. It was so painful. I always felt neglected, and when I finally talked about the topic, the answer was something like, you knew my oldest relationship was more important than ours, and we aren't not open to negotiations, but I love you. I was so confused. Well, yeah, I mean, that will send you off mixed signals. And this is where the problem lies, is like it inevitably when like some people just aren't really going to get this whole, the whole you need to value everyone equally sort of as a human being first kind of thing, where you can't really say things like, I value, or rather this, you know, this person is more important in general, because
and we are not open to negotiations. Yeah, and
we are not open to negotiations. It's just a bit, it's, I don't know, like on the one hand, you know, some people might say, well, they, you know, they told you this in the first place, but it's like, okay, but no one should ever be closed off in the negotiations completely or talking more about it completely.
Yeah.
Like, how much does that person really care if they're willing to just cast you aside?
Yeah. And I think it's important as well to try and have these discussions as early on as you can. And like, I'm not saying this person didn't do that, but, you know, I mean, I've talked about this before. I have had a period in my life when we first opened that I didn't even know to discuss these things. I didn't know about what vocabulary to use.
Yep.
So I can understand kind of getting into a relationship with someone and then having a rude shock when they're like, oh, we're not open to negotiations, which essentially is what happened to me. And that's quite like painful and hurtful. And you are confused because you feel like, oh, but we were dating. So what's, you can't just do that. But
you're not a piece of legislation to be vetoed. You're not a piece of paper with writing on. You are a human being and much more complex than that.
Yeah.
As complex as legislation can be. human beings are infinitely more so.
I just think it's, I always try to have these conversations early on about what another person's relationship structure is. Like if you are, if you enter into any scenario willingly and with like full and informed consent, then like live your truth. But I think you're right when you say that people aren't always going to, there's always going to be the danger that people are misinformed or that they don't want to find out about it or they're just not that interested or, you know, there's a lot of this is a really murky subject. And I think when you've got a secondary that's well negotiated and that you're all on the same page and you understand it can work really well, but if you're subject to veto powers and things like this, that's a really awful scenario to be in.
Yeah. And another thing, I think polyamory is at a stage in its kind of, you know, it's in a place in our society at the moment that, yeah, it's becoming more openly talked about and considered by more people, but it's still really in its infancy of rebirth, if you will, in its kind of like, in the sense that most people are still learning about it. So you need to consider that whenever you have a, you know, potential secondary or whatever you want to call it, potential girlfriend or boyfriend outside of you, you know, another relationship that you have. You need to consider that when you're like negotiating with, you know, making your relationship agreements with them, because everyone might be at a different stage of learning, you know? So something to think about.
Yeah, and I think it's like, okay, at what, like, are they open-minded? Are they willing to, if you're the one that knows a little bit more or this is your orientation, are they open-minded? Are they willing to listen to you and to learn and meet you where you are? Or are they not? And second of all, you know, how much do you want to take on as a person? How much do you, if you want to sign up for that, that's fantastic. If you don't, then like, it's a good option. That's why I'm saying try and have these conversations as early as you can.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay, I'm going to read
the next one
in the
bed.
Not so keen on secondary life. Okay, this person says, I recognize that there are lots of people comfortable being someone secondary. And for those people, I support you and hope you thrive. In my practice of polyamory, I do not engage with any form of intentional hierarchy. However, there's a major difference between implied hierarchy and intentional. It's implied that parents / nesting partners / people who are tied together financially have a form of hierarchy over their other partners. But we can be intentional about acknowledging and working to reduce the impact this has. It's different, though, when a pairing intentionally declares that their relationship together is more important than their others. That is unethical and degrading to those other connections. And in that case, I personally stay far away from it. I think that person just summarized beautifully what we've been trying to say.
Yeah.
Much more eloquently than we could.
No notes. No notes.
Yeah.
I can't believe we didn't just read that right away and we would have...
Because we've just been like...
Yeah. We've just been...
Banging on.
Been flapping around, pussy-dicking around, as one of our favorite TV shows would say.
I love this distinction between implied and intentional.
Yes.
How well put is that?
You can't just imply. You need to kind of just say it. Like, you need to be radically honest, as our friend Nicole Payson would say.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I love that. I just
love that. Implied hierarchy and intentional. And we can be better at
future episode
communicating that. So it was hierarchy good or bad, and now it's going to be hierarchy, implied or intentional.
does anybody like being a secretary? And then... implied or intentional. All right.
Right.
Well, that summarizes the good and the bad. How about the ugly? We don't have any ugly. The good and the bad and the ugly were all mixed in together. There's some mixed experiences too.
Of course.
As is life, the spectrum of experience.
Yeah. I think, you know, humans are complicated. So
humans are a hot mess.
And I will say, it kind of made me think about from the last two responses as well, that it really does depend on the partner and the person. And you might meet someone that you're like, look, you've got a primary partner, but you're cool being their secondary because they communicate well, they treat you mm-hmm. with respect, they mm-hmm. negotiate things with you. It's intentional. And there might be people where it's not intentional. So, yeah, I think that's really interesting.
Yeah. So our first person for the mixed experiences says, I've had mixed experiences. Great start. I'm the secondary to both of my current partners in terms of the time commitment, but neither of them would ever refer to me with that word. I want to build a life with someone too one day. It hurts sometimes not being there yet, but a vast majority of the time, my existing connections make me very happy. Both my partners still treat me far better than anyone did when I was monogamous.
I also love that this person has talked about a time commitment. Mm. And so whether that's the basis of being a secondary, it's like maybe it's emotional. Maybe you're like, oh, I'm not falling in love with people, or, you know, some people have restrictions on sex positions and things, and like we can get into that in a whole nother episode. But there is a lot of, I think also I've been thinking mainly in my experience about emotional hierarchy, but this is another really important point is like time as well. You know, oh, I can't commit this much time, so therefore I'm a secondary because of my time. We can still fall in love together. We can still have emotions and experiences together, but we only do that once a month. Or we only do that at an agreed time because of time.
This all just reminds me of this general life stuff as well, though. Like, at the end of the day, you have work, you have social, you have family, you have mm-hmm. whatever, all kind of, you have time, work time, social time. Like, we're all just balancing all these things, and it just seems like what's the difference, really, if we have, like, within those things, we also break down our time amongst different people. We do that anyway, already, with friends, if you're monogamous, with friends and a partner. For non-monogamous people, it's just partners and friends.
Yeah, and that is what that one of the earlier responses said about not having the social pressure that they experienced when they were non-monogamous around these social expectations.
Yep.
And this gives you the opportunity to not have to deal with those social expectations. And it does help to be able to label things sometimes so that you can say, I don't have to go into these social expectations. I don't have to let this influence the relationship I'm having with this person or these people. I'm a secondary, and I'm because I don't have time or emotional capacity or whatever it is that you don't have at that moment in your life right now. So therefore, that's how I'm going to remind myself that I don't have to do these social expectations. That doesn't mean that labels can't be limiting. Of course they can be, but they can also help you. At least for me, I find that it helps me be like an almost like a bit of a sort of reminder. Okay. I'm this, so I don't have to feel like this. I don't have to subscribe to these unhelpful things. And maybe this is also why that term or a version of that term can be useful to help people break out of the things that don't serve them anymore.
Very well said.
Thank you.
Nothing to add.
No. Okay, I'm going to read.
But we do have one more mixed. One more mixed.
This is our final, final response. I love being a secondary, but the hardest part is my partner lives with his primary partner. We are all neighbors, but he spends the majority of his time with his primary. Another hard thing is people not understanding our relationship and thinking I am, quote, a homewrecker because they have been together longer. I love being the secondary, though, and wouldn't have it any other way. This raises a really good point about people who say, well, we've been together longer, so our relationship is more important, i.e. the value of a relationship is determined by the length of time.
Yeah.
What do you think about
that? We've spoken about this before, and I can't remember who it was with. It was a very good point nonetheless. And
I mean, it was on our podcast, I'm sure it was.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It was on our podcast. I think it was Roy Graff, actually. That's why it was such a long time
ago.
Way
back
now.
When, yeah.
Yeah. It's so true. I mean, how often when we, you know, when you're, particularly when you're young, when you first feel these feelings for the first time, you feel them incredibly strongly because they're new and you're not quite sure what to do with them, I guess.
No, that's not just isolated to women, let me tell you that much.
Yeah, true. But there's this feeling that's like people will say you've only known each other for like a couple of weeks, how can you, and it's like time is not a, you know, you say the inverse of what we're just saying, you say time is not a good measure of how you feel or how important someone is, and yet for some reason in this scenario it is, and it's like, well, what happened there then? I think at the end of the day, the quality of your connection, regardless of how long you've known each other or been seen each other. I mean, my new work colleagues, I love them all already, and I've only been working with them for less than 4 weeks. You know, they're all amazing, and they've already solidified themselves as new close friends.
Mm-hmm.
So, oh yeah, it's a moot point for me.
Yeah,
The time argument.
I think it can be really difficult when you go through a breakup. Because you can look back and go, oh gosh, like I spent so much time with my person, with that person, but yeah, and you look back and all there's like just the amount of memories and time. But I think, this person saying that they think, oh, you're a homewrecker because they've been together longer, that's a really tough position to be in because it's clearly an intentional relationship you've got there. So,
and also, you know, there are two people involved there. It's not like one person can come in and quote unquote wreck a home, if you want to look at it that way. But I think in non-monogamy that term just doesn't even work. Well, anyway,
that's the classic of like,
it's also sexist as hell because it's always the woman that's the home wrecker. A man is never a home wrecker.
We don't know whether this person is a woman.
That's a good point. but my point still stands that most of the time, it's a home wrecker.
Yeah.
The woman is the home wrecker when people are making this outdated argument.
Okay, I want to ask you a question.
Okay.
What do you think about being a secondary? How do you feel personally about it?
Well, if we've learned anything from these responses, is that being a secondary is a spectrum of experience, like most things. So I don't think there is a one-size-fits-all answer to this question. I think that for some people it really works and power to them, and to others it's just not for them. Remind you of anything?
Life.
monogamy, non-monogamy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Relationship styles.
And would you, are you open to being a secondary?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If that's, if the dynamic worked, if that's how it, if that's how our relationship was, was its most authentic self, and I had a good connection and we treated each other with respect and, you know, had the time for each other, then absolutely, why not?
So,
what about you?
As someone who's polybiori.
Polybiori.
I'm going to trademark that.
Yeah.
Do
put on a t-shirt, I'm polybiori. Are you polybiori?
Do you, you're not always looking for love connections, you're not always looking for...
Not always, like, but a secondary can be a love connection too.
No, I mean, like, I probably should have said longer term or more like primary-esque partners. You're not necessarily looking for that all the time. I just kind of wanted to ask that question just so that if anyone's out here wondering, oh, well, if you're by orientation, does that mean that you're always looking for something or not? Like, I just thought it would be like a good opportunity for you to talk to that.
Not at all. There probably are people out there who are poly by ori and are looking for that, but I'm not one of them.
Yeah, cool. Cool.
What about you? Reciprocate.
I am, of course, open to being a secondary too. And I think as we've identified in these responses, there are a lot of benefits.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of opportunities in having relationships like that. And especially someone, we're all really busy. We've got lots going on. I travel a lot. Like, I can imagine a secondary relationship really fitting really well into my life. I have been burned in the past, though. My first proper relationship outside of ours was, I was burned. I was vetoed. And as I said earlier in this episode, I did not have the vocabulary to know how to negotiate or understand. And that was a really painful period for me.
Mm.
And so I think I'm a little bit wary of that. I think I'm a little bit just aware of that not necessarily happening again. But I think I've also got the tools now to avoid it. Doesn't mean that I'm not nervous about having conversations with the new partners about this and thinking, oh gosh, like, what if I get an answer that I don't want to hear? Or if I saw, I was seeing someone that I thought would have, would not be a quote secondary.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you and I aren't really the sort of couple that has, a nesting couple that has super hierarchical sort of vibes. So it's for us more like, what is this relationship going to be with this person rather than what category are they going to fit into? And I do try to leave that as open and as fluid as possible until it naturally comes to what it is. So, yeah, I'm open to it, but I also wouldn't necessarily just apply that label if I didn't have to.
Yeah, yeah. Anything to add?
I don't think so.
Well, look, let me tell you something. We may not have much in the way of hierarchy, but, baby, you are a boss. And we just bossed this episode.
I was like, what is going on?
Cue Bruce Springsteen.
The boss. Oh, my gosh.
Apologies. I'm a dad.
Such a dad.
I think we did it. Did we do it? As our friends at Gayish would say.
Yeah, we're like, did we do it?
Did we do it?
I think we did it.
We did it.
As always, guys, please get in touch with us, share your thoughts and feelings. Yeah. We're always interested.
I'd love to do another one of these sorts of episodes where it's all about your responses and just give us something to bounce off. And because I just love getting the community involved.
Yep.
That's what this podcast is about.
Yep.
And it's done it very well so far, I think, for us. So we want to do the same for you.
We did the podcast version of a reaction video.
Did we? Yes. Yes. That is actually a really good way of putting it.
We're just reacting and talking about what we think about people.
Yeah, like, but we're prompting things. The thing that we're going to react to later on. So it's kind of like a meta reaction.
Me reacting to the reaction?
No, reacting.
Yeah, because these are reactions from.
Yes, they're reacting to us asking them something, and then we're reacting to that. So it's like reactception.
Yes.
Meta reactception.
We did reactception.
Yeah. I think we need to end the episode.
Okay, we're getting delirious now, guys. Okay, we're going to go. Thanks so much.
Thanks again.
See you next time.
Bye. Bye.